Hi, everybody. My name is Hank Johnson. I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank Susie for asking me to speak here tonight. And I hope she's having a good time wherever she is. It really is a privilege to speak here. And there are a lot of people in this room that I love and that's made the life that I have today possible. And I owe a lot to everybody here. I like the Pacific Group. I hated AA when I first came to it. And when I finally got involved in the Pacific Group, I started getting enthusiastic about my sobriety. And I still have that feeling. I drank a lot. I drank a long, long time. I started drinking in high school a little bit. But I really hit the big time when I turned 18. Because I went into a bar when I was 18 years old, and you're supposed to be 21 here in California, and I passed for 21, and they served me, and immediately I became a man. That's what I wanted to be, a man, and a man can buy a drink over a bar without being asked how old he is. And I could play the jukebox over in the corner just as good as the rest of the guys, and I thought my selection of songs were a little better than most, if you want to know the truth. I could sit at, at the bar and look at myself in the mirror and get better looking after each drink. And I just went back every opportunity I had from then on. And I was 18 years old and I didn't have to learn another thing as long as I lived. And so for the next 25 years, I dealt with life with a set of emotions that were 18 years old. And no wonder I had problems, you know. It's okay when you're 18 to act 18, but when 20 years goes by and you're still acting that way, well, then you seem to have a little problem. And but I drank every opportunity I had. I liked to drink. And drinking was the focus in my life. The only thing I ever learned while sober was work. Everything else included drinking. I either drank before, during, or after, and generally it was all three. And I just drank. And you hear a lot of exciting stories sometimes from this podium. People get up here and tell the most exciting stories you can imagine. You know, they go into bars, they punch everybody out in the bar, and the cops come, and they punch the cops out, and they get thrown in jail, and they go over to the bunk they want, pull a guy out of the bunk, and punch him out, too. You know, that's exciting drinking. And I used to hear a guy talk about driving through a tunnel 60 miles an hour and decide to make a U-turn right in the middle of the tunnel. And he used to hit telephone poles all the time, only they were 100 yards off the highway. And Jesus, you know, that's drinking. That's exciting drinking. All I ever did is just sat around and drank. Had I known I was going to be the main speaker here tonight, I would have tried to spice up my story a little bit. But all I did is just sat around and drank. I used to play old phonograph records. I used to watch a lot of TV. Sometimes I'd read a book, nothing very heavy, just some condensed version in the Reader's Digest. You know, and I just kind of let the world go by. I'm an observer of life, you know. I never participated in it. I just observed you doing it and criticized the way you did it. And my life was very boring, to put it mildly, you know. And I heard a young guy speak about his father one time. He said his dad used to just sit around and act like a goober, you know. That's kind of the way I was. And I used to get kicked out of the house a lot. My wife used to come home and find me intoxicated. That used to excite her for some reason. And she'd tell me to leave. And it never occurred to me to stand up for my rights and say, wait a minute, you know, I'm paying the bills here. You know, I belong here. I'm making the payments, you know. You can't kick me out of here. But, you know, I did. had no self-worth back in those days. She said leave, and I just left. And I never moved very far from home. I just moved down the street, and then I'd work my way back in. I was in and out, back and forth, and she divorced me 3 times, and I wound up in a little shack in Hermosa Beach, a little garage. They made some living quarters there, and I thought, you know, this is the 3rd time she divorced me. For God's sake, if you want a divorce, you got it. You can have the house, you can have the furniture, you can have everything. Just all I want is my stack of old 78 records. You can have everything else. And I moved in this little place, and it was marvelous, because it was a half a block from the water. And I figured, gee, I'll get up early in the morning, and I'll go along, and I'll run along the ocean 5 miles every morning. And I really get in shape, and it'll just be great. You know, as far as I know, the water was down there. You really can't prove it by me. And I used to go to work late and come home early. And I'd sit at the edge of my bed after buying the cheapest bottle of vodka I could find. And I'd untap that cheap vodka, and I'd just be disgusted with myself because I didn't do a decent day's work, and I'd sit at the edge of my bed, and I'd take a big draft out of that bottle, you know, several swallows, and I'd say to myself, well, you've done it again today, you know, this cannot continue. You're the only guy that I know that just can't seem to get out of his tracks. Everybody at the office is doing good, and you're just wasting your time, and I'd sit there, and I'd go into my fantasy, and I'd think about starting tomorrow. It's all going to be different. Starting tomorrow, I'm going to get up at 7 o'clock, and I'll get down to that office. I'll knock out paperwork for a couple hours, and when that phone starts ringing tomorrow, I'm going to be ready to do business. And starting tomorrow, it's all going to be different. Starting tomorrow, a whole new life is going to start, you know. Every waking hour, I'm going to earn money. Every waking hour. I've got a key to that office. I can go in there on Saturday and I'll knock out paperwork. And hell, I can go in there on Sunday and I'll plan my work for the coming week. You know, if you're in sales, if you plan your work and then work your plan, you can't miss. And I knew everything starting tomorrow was going to be great. And then I'd get to thinking, how much, you know, if I triple my income, I'm going to be out of debt in no time. What are you going to do with all the money then? Well, I'm going to buy a white Lincoln Continental, drive it up to that house where she still lives, and I'll drop it off in the middle of the night with a little note. Thanks for all the good years. And I'll sign it H. Yeah. And then I'll buy a smaller car for myself, a little Mercedes coupe. You know. You know, and I'd sit there and I'd fantasize my life away. And I'd think, you know, I'll get all this money coming in and I'll buy a boat and I'll sail all around the world. I'll just, you know, I've been everywhere in the world, sitting on the edge of my bed. You name it, I've been there. And I'd look up at the clock and it would be like 10 minutes to 11. My God, I just feel like I just sat down here, you know. And I'd check the time. I'd call the operator and check. 10 minutes to 11. My Jesus. And I'm almost out of booze. So I'd throw my clothes over my pajamas and run 2 blocks to the liquor store. I had to get there before 11. Close at 11. That's when I first started jogging, about that time. I had to make it. I'd get the guy just as he was closing up. Bottle of Smirnoff. I always bought the better brand right there around where I lived. I wouldn't want them to think I was cheap right in the neighborhood. And then I could stroll back to my shack with peace and contentment and security for the rest of the night. And I'd have a few more drinks, and I'd play a few more of those old records, and I'd start rehearsing the speech I was going to have to give, because I was going to be salesman of the year. I knew that. I'd wake up the next morning and it'd be 10 o'clock and I'm already an hour late to work. And I'd get to work and I'd shuffle papers and I'd make excuses, and at a respectable time I'd go to the bar that was conveniently located right next door to where I worked. and I'd go there and have a martini. And then I'd have another one, then I'd have another one, then I'd have another one. Then I'd call the office and tell them, I forgot to tell you. I'm going on a lot of calls this afternoon. Take messages. I'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. And I'd head towards the beach and stop and buy the cheapest bottle of vodka I could find. And I'd get home about 2 or 2:30 and I'd hang up my clothes real carefully and put my pajamas on. I'd sit on the edge of the bed and untap that cheap vodka, and I'd take a big, big jolt out of it, and I'd say to myself, you know, done it again today. This cannot continue. You know, you're not the only guy that's ever been divorced. You're not the only guy that's ever been in debt. Why the hell don't you do something about it? Get a second job, at least. You can't do anything about your marriage. At least you can get a second job. And wait a minute, you don't need to get a second job. You're in sales. If you're in sales, you can make out any amount of money you want to, within reason. By God, that's right. Starting tomorrow morning, it's all going to be good. Starting tomorrow morning, I'm going to get down to that office by 7. I'm going to knock out paperwork for a couple hours, and that phone starts ringing tomorrow. I'm going to be ready to do business. And starting tomorrow, it's a whole new life. A whole new life is starting tomorrow, you know. And every waking hour, I'm going to earn money. Every waking hour. And hell, I can go in there on Saturday and clean up my paperwork. I got a key to the place. I can go in there and plan my work for the coming week. And I'll be out of debt in no time. What are you going to do with all the money then? Buy a white Lincoln Continental and drive it up to that. Buy a smaller car for myself. And starting tomorrow, a whole new life starts. And, you know, I didn't do that once or twice. I did that hundreds of times. About that time I got a call from my ex-wife. She said, come and get your drunken son. He's just like you are. You know, it seemed he had turned 16 and he was going to high school and he was getting in trouble. Nothing major, a lot of nickel and dime stuff, but just enough that it was driving her crazy. And it seemed that he had gone to some kind of a party and came home drunk and threw up on the carpet or whatever it was. And what it was the last straw, that's what it was. And she called and said, come and get your drunken son, just like you are. And instead of saying, you know, I had no self-worth back then. Instead of saying, wait a minute, you divorced me. You know, you got custody of that kid, you know. You're having trouble with him? Deal with it. But no. She said, come and get him, son. No, we ain't got him. He didn't want to come and live with me, and I didn't want him to come and live with me. But she said, so we had to do it, right? And, you know, he used to come down and visit me once in a while before that, spend a weekend with me. I never knew what to say to him. What do you say to a 16-year-old kid? I could never think of anything. And I thought, well, if I was a real dad, what would I be saying? And so I started criticizing him on his grades. And how come you're not playing football? You know, you ought to be student body president. And all things I kind of wish I would have been when I was in school. And he just used to shrug that off. And that's if I wasn't drinking. If I was drinking, I just tended to slobber all over him and tell him how much I loved. All the trouble your mother and I have had through the years has nothing to do with you. We love you. And he used to sit there and just cringe. And I couldn't stop. You know, once you start on something like that, I don't know about you, I just can't quit. And I would just pour it on. You know, that's the one decent thing that your mother and I did, was to have you. He used to just sit there in pain. And I'd have him cornered so he couldn't get away, and I would just, and finally he'd escape somehow. And the next morning I'd just be ashamed of myself, you know. Not that I had been drunk the night before, but that I had let my guard down and told my son I loved him. See, I'm from the old school. You don't show emotions to anybody at any time. And I practiced that all my life. No one knew how I was feeling, I'll tell you that. I never smiled, I never laughed. You know, if someone told me a joke, instead of laughing, I'd say, that's funny. The only time I'd ever laugh is if I saw you fall down and hurt yourself or something. I just couldn't control myself then. done. And so I was ashamed of myself that I had let my guard down and told my son I loved him. And I'd dump him in the car and drive him home and open a door and get rid of him. Because, geez, I couldn't look him in the eye. And he asked his mother one time, says, "You've divorced him. Is there any kind of legal action I can take? I don't want to go back there." And he had to come and live with me. And that was the start of a beautiful relationship that we've still got going to this day. And wasn't very much longer after that she moved in with us too. And seemed like she came down and checked on him one time. One thing led to another, and we started talking, and we admitted to each other that we were miserable people, and that we seemed to be more miserable apart than we were together. So why don't we try this thing one more time, and sell that house up in Torrance, and pay off our bills, and we'll get a fresh start. Our daughter had already split by then, and he would be going into service or something, and who did we have except each other? And so why are we treating each other this way? And we'd make a fresh start. And she said, "I won't even fight you on your drinking anymore. In fact, I'll join you." And I should have been suspicious, but I wasn't. Because you see, all the years I was married to her, she never drank. And little did I know that during that 2 or 3 year period that we were apart, she had started drinking. And she crossed that so-called invisible line into alcoholism immediately. You know, she always, when she spoke in AA, she used to say that she was born an alcoholic. She knew she was an alcoholic. Before she even drank, she knew it. Because she had a father that, he was a real nice guy, but when he drank, all hell would break loose. And he'd go on a 3 week drunk or something, and he'd wind up in the hospital or even worse sometimes. And she was always afraid to drink. And little did I know that, you know, her fears were well founded, I'll tell you that. Because she was just not a fun person to be around when she drank. Some of us can drink and some of us can't. And she was just one of those that should never drink. So she says, she used to always say she was born an alcoholic. In my case, I think I drank myself into alcoholism. I had a lot of fun with alcohol for a long time. It was a social lubricant for me. It enabled me to dance and romance and do all the things that normal people seem to be able to do without drinking. And it was my friend. And I had a lot of fun drinking. But it turned on me. I became allergic to it. I can't tell you when that happened, but it did. I know it. But same thing happened to me with penicillin. I took penicillin several times. It always was fine. The last time I took penicillin, I wound up in the hospital for 8 days. I damn near died. The doctor said, "Who gave you this penicillin anyhow?" You know, I said, "Well, what do you mean? It's always worked just fine." He says, "Well, don't ever take it again." He says, "You're allergic to it." And I said, "Well, how can that be?" I said, "It's always worked fine for me." And he says, "Well, sometimes a person becomes allergic to it." And he says, "I advise you, never take it again. You really might die the next time." No kidding. I promise I will never take it again. And I'm proud to stand up here tonight and tell you people that I've got about 32 years off of that stuff. It hasn't been necessary for me to join any kind of an organization. Now, I don't even know if they've got Penicillin Anonymous. I'm not even sure that, I haven't had to get a sponsor about it. It hasn't been necessary for me to call anybody up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and say I've got this uncontrollable desire to take a shot of penicillin. I just quit cold turkey, and it hasn't been necessary for me to take a shot again. Same thing happened to me with booze. The only thing is, I just never have had a craving for penicillin for some reason. So I think I drank myself into alcoholism. It really doesn't matter if you're if you're an alcoholic from the first drink, or you drink yourself into alcohol, and we're all alcoholics anyhow. And after she moved in, all hell broke loose, and we just could never drink together. And I'm not here to take her inventory, you understand, but I'm just going to tell you a couple of things that she did. It'll help you understand my case a little better. But she did stuff like throw the Christmas tree, lights and all, out the back door. She used to bake my old phonograph records, you know, just because I played them more than once. I don't know about you people, but I get hung up on a song sometimes. I'm still playing, it's 20 years later, I'm still playing the same records I was playing when I was 18 years old. And I play this record, and it's like the first time I ever heard it. My God, that's a good song. So I play it again. And then one more time. And again. And sometimes I just get hung up on a trumpet toot. I'd lay that needle in there, toot, oh man, that's a real one. Yeah. I'd lay it in there again, toot. And I used to drive her crazy. And she'd go over to the phonograph and just take the record off a turntable and smash it. My God, don't break those. Those are collector items. You know, you can't replace that. Good, I'll never have to hear that again. And we could never drink together. It was just bad news. I finally told her, I said, well, this isn't working out any better than it worked out before. And I allowed you to kick me out of all those other houses, but I moved here first. Therefore, you go this time. And I'm going to go to my brother's house tonight. And when I come back tomorrow morning, I expect you to be gone. That's more time than you ever gave me. And we're not even married, remember? You divorced me. And so I went to my brother's house and drank with him all night. And while I was gone in a blackout, she decided to commit suicide again. That was another one of her character defects. She was suicidal. She was all, that's how she dealt with. You know, if something bad happened, you just kill yourself, that's all. And that night, she was suicidal right into AA. She had about 8 months of sobriety, and something bad happened. It must have been bad. She was going to do it again. And then she remembered she couldn't because she was the cookie lady at the meeting that night. Sometimes you wonder why they give some of us flaky people some of the jobs they give us around here. Well, they're life-saving jobs, that's why. So anyway, that night, she, in a blackout, she decided to commit suicide, but before she did, she went into the closet where my clothes were hanging and just took a knife and slashed every stitch of clothes that I owned, just ripped everything to pieces, just made a complete shambles out of everything, even cut my ties in half and my shirts, and went into my dresser drawer and even cut up my shorts. Then she took the rags that she had made and put them around the doors and the windows and tried to make the place airtight. And she went in the kitchen and turned the gas on, the kitchen oven, and went to bed. Next morning, she woke up. Nothing happened. Again. And she had been the only one that had been there that night. She looked around and saw the mess that she had made, and she could not believe what she had done. And then I came home. And I had trouble believing it myself. And then our son came home, and he checked it out, and he thought we were moving again. We used to move a little bit, you know. My son said he went to 12 different, we moved 14 times in 12 years, and he tends to exaggerate. I think it was only about 13. But we used to move a lot, and we had hit bottom. That was our bottom. You know, I'm from a good family. She was from a good family. When we got married, we were going to do a lot of wonderful things with our life. We had great plans. We were going to live the good life. And all we had managed to do is sit around and drink every bit of goodness out of our lives. And from then on, it was bad. From then on, nothing was good. It wasn't all that good prior to that, but from then on, it was terrible. And we had hit bottom. I didn't know it, but I'd hit bottom. And See, this is the part of the story where Jerry guy said, and I had got him, so I called AA, and some real nice guy came out and took me to a meeting, and everything's just been wonderful ever since. Not me. I didn't know it. I didn't know I'd hit bottom, so I just kept on drinking. And sometimes they say I had a moment of truth, so I called AA. Hell, every time I ever had a moment of truth, I drank immediately. I don't want to know anything about the truth. I've had 1,000 moments of truth. Every time I have one, I drink. I can't face the truth, especially about me. I can face a little bit about you, but I'd rather not, you know. And but the truth about myself, I have to drink. So there we were. And we had started back to group therapy a little bit before that. And we had gone to therapy off and on for I don't know how many years. But this was a couple's workshop, and that's where married couples go and cop out on one another. And this therapist asked me, "Do you really drink as much as she says?" I said, "Hell yes, I do. I drink a lot. Who wouldn't? Married to a woman like that. I got two of the worst children you could possibly imagine. Pressure job. My God, the pressure on that job alone would make a person drink. And, but what's the big deal about it anyway? So I drink. You know, they've never missed a meal. They've always had a place to sleep. They've always had clothes. They've always had roller skates and bicycles and whatever they needed. And I just don't understand what the big deal is about my drinking. And I said, you know, I need to drink. I put a pressure day in. I got a pressure-packed day. So I come home and I have a few drinks. So what? You know. He said, have you ever thought of quitting? I said, as a matter of fact, I am. And I thought about it every night. I'm not going to quit tonight, but starting tomorrow morning I am. And he said, have you ever thought of going to AA? And I said, thanks, but no thanks. I've already been to AA. And I had gone to a meeting one time. It was one of these meetings where they pass out chips for various lengths of sobriety. And that night the leader said, does anyone just finish their first 30 days of sobriety? If so, come up and get a chip. And this guy came up with his chip. And, my name's Joe Blow and I'm an alcoholic. I'm really proud to get this chip. And I know this is a spiritual program that I found God when I walked through the doors of AA. It's the lights in the eyes of the people that just turn me on and keep me coming back to these meetings. I just love every single person here. Just before I came to the meeting tonight, I got a call from my employer, and he's made me general manager down at the plant. What a wonderful, glorious way of life this is. And for all you newcomers, keep coming back. We love you. And I thought, oh, my God. Anybody else? And then here comes this lady. My name is Mary Smith, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm really proud to get this chip, and I know this is a spiritual program, and that I found God when I walked through the doors of AA. And it's the lights in the eyes of the people that just turn me on and keep me coming back to these meetings. I just love every single person here. Hate is no longer a word in my vocabulary. I love everybody. Not just the members of AA, everybody in the whole world. Just a short time ago, my children were failing in school, and now they're getting letters from all the major universities throughout the United States. And I'm proud to stand up here tonight and say that my husband and I are a couple once again. And I thought, oh, God. And I, you know, I never went back, that's all. And so when this guy suggested I go to AA, I said, forget it. I've already been to AA. And I said, some kind of a spiritual program or religious cult of some kind. And it's okay for them, but it's just not for me. And but I read an article on some stuff called an abuse. And I think I'll get some of that, because I'm going to quit once and for all, just to prove that alcohol has nothing to do with our problem. And I was right. It was a symptom of it. But So I went to this doctor to get antabuse, and I had been told, don't drink for at least 48 hours prior to coming to the appointment. And I went there, and this doctor checked me out, and he said, you know, if you haven't had a drink for 48 hours, you need never take another drink as long as you live. You're over the hump. If you can stay sober 48 hours without drinking, you need never drink again. And gee, he just scared the hell out of me. And he just went on and on and on about the disease of alcoholism. How we got character defects, he said. And he said, then we refuse to cope with our problems. Instead of coping, we drink tonight instead. We wake up the next morning, we still got all our problems, only now we got a hangover on top of it. And we seem to repeat this over and over again. And he was telling me my story, and I just didn't recognize it. And so I finally said to him, you know, if you're not going to give me any antabuse, then I guess I better go. And he said, I can see I'm not making much of an impression on you, so I'm going to tell you something. He says, my wife's an alcoholic. I wouldn't normally tell my patients that, but due to the nature of your appointment here today, I'm going to tell you that. He says, we've tried everything known to medical science. We've tried rest homes and sanitariums and antabuse, and we've tried everything, and nothing's ever worked for her. But she's sober now. She goes to AA, and that's what I recommend that you do. And, you know, after this fiasco where my wife tried to commit suicide, she had been with me and heard all this stuff. So she went back to him and asked him if he thought she was an alcoholic. And he said he didn't know, but why didn't she go to some meetings with his wife? And so she did. And the very first thing they taught her, the very first thing they told her in AA was that it wasn't her fault that I drank. They could have started her out with something entirely different than that. I just about had her convinced that it was all her fault that I drank. But they said, no, you know, you can't make anybody drink. And if you think, you know, so don't carry that guilt around. It's some kind of an ego trip you're on if you think you can make somebody drink. He would have drank regardless of whether you ever met him or not. You know, and you can't make him quit either. So don't pour his booze down the sink. He'll just go buy another bottle. But if you think you've got a problem with alcohol, if you think you're an alcoholic, maybe you better come back to these meetings and work on your problem and just let that SOB drink himself to death. That's what he wants to do. It's his life. And she kind of liked the ring of that. And I went to some meetings with her, and I hated the meetings, and I finally told her, I said, I've gone to my last meeting. But, you know, a funny thing happened to me. I went to several meetings with her, and I hated those meetings. And I had a bad attitude, and I had closed ears. I wouldn't refuse to listen to what was being said, and I'd be damned if I still didn't get the message anyhow. And I found out that I was an alcoholic. And so I said, I'm going to quit drinking, but I can't go to AA anymore. I can't stand the meetings. And so I did. I quit drinking a little bit before Thanksgiving. And I stayed sober. I didn't drink through the drinkingest part of the year, through the drinking, through the Christmas holidays. And the Saturday night after Christmas, she went off to a meeting, and I stayed home. And I kind of took a little mini inventory of the situation. And I said, you know, you're wrong. You're really not an alcoholic after all. If you can stay sober since before Thanksgiving and not drink through the drinking as part of the year, that proves one thing. It proves that you're not an alcoholic. So I went to the liquor store, and I bought a half a pint of vodka. And I no sooner got it back to the place, and I drank it. And what the hell did I buy a half pint for? I went and got a fifth, and went and got another fifth. And I drank all day Saturday, and all Saturday night, and all day Sunday. And I closed a bar up somewhere at 2 a.m., woke up the next morning, it was 10 o'clock, and I'm already an hour late to work, and it's Monday, and you got to go in on Monday or you're an alcoholic. And so I did, and I went over to the bar a little early that day, and I had a Bloody Mary, because that's what you have when you're sick. And the bartender asked me if I wanted another one. I said, just skip it. And I haven't had a drink since. And that's been a little over 18 years ago. And my life has changed dramatically. And I didn't know that that was going to be my last drink. Had I known, that that was going to be my last drink, I wouldn't have had a Bloody Mary, I'll tell you that. I could have had something in a fancy glass, like a brandy, you know, a 50-year-old brandy or something in a fancy glass. I could have drank it straight down, and then I could have smacked that glass out of it. Stomped out of the bar, triumphant over alcohol. But I didn't know it was my last drink. So far it has been. And I found myself in AA meetings of all places. And then anger set in. And I had just completed about 30 years of drinking. And I've got this rotten wife and two of the worst children you could possibly imagine. Pressure job. And I owe money to everybody. And it's all past due. And now I can't even drink, for God's sake. What am I going to do with the rest of my life? Nothing. That's what I'm going to do. There's nothing to do if you don't drink. I don't care what they say in AA. You know, I need a drink and to function. And hell, I'll never be able to go out socially again. I'm stuck at Denny's for the rest of my life. I'll never go to a decent restaurant ever again. What's the first thing they want to know when you go to a nice restaurant? Would you like a cocktail before dinner? That's what they want to know. And you can't say, well, yeah, I'd like one, but you see, I've got this disease. And it's of a twofold nature. It's an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. If I had to take even one drink, I can't predict my behavior. If it wasn't for that, I'd sure have one, I'll tell you that. I used to think you had to explain all that stuff to people. I used to spend 90% of my day back then explaining things to people that didn't want to hear the explanation. And, you know, if I was standing on a street corner and somebody walked up, I'd try to explain what I was doing there. I had no self-worth. I had to explain just what little bit of space I was taking up. And that's what I'm trying to do now, is to quit explaining. And it's hard. Every once in a while, I catch myself, you know, and I'll start on some long story. I always start from the day I was born. You know, I bring you up to date so you know all the ramifications and so you can understand my case. And sometimes I find myself explaining and I catch myself. And I stop right in mid-explanation. And you know the sick part of this is they never notice the difference. It turns out no one's listening to your explanations. It turns out that no one wants to hear your excuses why you haven't done something you were supposed to do in the first place. And so I'm trying to quit altogether. And so, you know, this is... Anyway, it's been really good to me. You know, it enabled me to do a lot of things, to cope with a lot of things that I would never have been able to cope with had I not had this program. And time prevents me from telling you all about it. I goofed around here in my talk and I haven't told you a damn thing. But my wife got sick and died of cancer. I was able to help her, however, when she was sick. I was able to be dependable. That's what AA has done for me. It's made me be dependable, and you can count on me. And it's made me current in my, you know, when I wake up in the morning now, and you know, I'm current. I was always behind. I was always coming from behind all the time. And AA has made me current. And my wife and I, we had some good years in AA. And we had a turbulent marriage, but we had some good years in AA. And when she died, it was a shame. But, I don't have to stand up here and feel guilty because, you see, I did everything I was supposed to do. Our house was in order. And obviously, you can't help anybody unless your house is in order. That's what it says. And so we were current in our relationship. Everything that needed to be said had long been said. And so... when she died, I can stand up here tonight, and I'm not guilty. I don't have any feeling of guilt. I don't have to say, if only I would have done this, if only I would have only said that. No, I'm free. and I can close the door on that episode of my life. I'm glad I was married to her, and I'm glad she's the mother of my children, and I miss her, but it's okay, because I've got a wonderful life going for me because of the 12 steps and the things that you learn around this group. I just want to tell you something that my son, that used to look at me so funny back in those days, turns out he's an alcoholic too. And he used to look at me awful funny back in those days. Well, the reason was that he was stoned out of his gourd. But I'll be damned if he didn't turn himself into AA too. And if he stays sober, on May the 27th, he'll have 15 years. My grandson comes to this meeting too. He's 21 years old. He's got 3 years of sobriety. And the three of us come to this meeting every Wednesday night and celebrate our sobriety together. And my daughter and my daughter-in-law both send you greetings from Al-Anon. And we're an AA family. And we weren't any kind of a family 18 years ago. We're still not the best family on the block, but we've all got the steps to work if we choose to work them. And thank you very much for having me.